This tape will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. With me, William English, and today's guest, artist Andrew Greaves. Good afternoon, Andrew.
Hello, William.
This weekend, starting today, in fact, or last night for the preview, sees and saw the 2010 London Art Book Fair at the Whitechapel Art Gallery, 77 to 82 Whitechapel High Street, London E17QX. And I've curated or selected or chosen, depending on one's level of self-importance, two programmes of films for this event, entitled Oblique Texts, Visual Dialects. The first programme starts at 4:30 this afternoon, that's Friday, comprising, and I have to consult my notes, programme one, Ted Berrigan by Anthony Stern, a 20-minute interview with poet Ted Berrigan. The director, Anthony Stern, will be at the screening. What Did You Eat Today? Jan Bove, by Sandra Cross. This is a portrait film of the co-founder of Light Cone Film Distribution, filmed in Paris, and the director, Sandra Cross, will also be present at the screening. And then followed by The Savage Eye by Joseph Strick, Ben Maddow and Sidney Mayers, made in 1959, a dramatised documentary film that combines a narration of the life of a divorced woman with documentary footage of an unspecified 1950s city. That's by Joseph Strick. So that programme starts this afternoon at 4:30, so that leaves about 90 minutes to get down there if you leave immediately, or 60 minutes if you listen to the end of this programme. Admission is free. The second programme starts at 4:30 on Sunday afternoon, and that comprises of Language Lessons by Steve Hawley, Gibberish by George Barber, John Cage Performs James Joyce by Takehiko Imiura, Poem Field No. 2 by Stan van der Beek, made in 1966, and last, Unnatural Order by Andrew Greaves and Brian Marley. So that programme starts at 4:30 on Sunday at the Whitechapel Art Gallery, admission free, and that brings us to today's guest, Andrew Greaves, maker of Unnatural Order. So, Andrew, can you perhaps describe something of the film to me? I mean, it is a... I think you corrected me earlier and said it was a collaboration with Brian Marley, not with Brian Marley.
No, the conditions of our collaboration was that I would make something, he would make something, and then we combine it.
Oh, right. Okay. So, yeah, I see. So did you not... So each of you didn't know what the other was doing? Or?
Well, I think that was the original idea, but it was 6 years ago, and I'm beginning... My memory is beginning to fail, I'm afraid. But I sent him the visuals, because... and then he did something with the visuals.
Right. But, oh, really? Okay.
Yes. Yeah,
so he's not purely a poet or a
he's
writer?
He's a writer, yep. Poet.
But also...
Critic.
But also able to engage with the visual side of the project then?
Yes, he's taken up photography recently.
Oh, right.
So, well, again, he's re-taken up photography.
Yeah.
So he's now a photographer.
Oh, right. Okay. So that film is... where is it? Let me see. It is 14 minutes, colour, digital video animation, is that?
Animation, digital animation.
Digital animation. We have a problem with this word film, don't we? Because I ask you, what do? Do you make films? And you correct me, you think of them as movies.
Well, whatever. Movies is the American term for film, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's a bit... That's a bit pretentious, perhaps, but...
It's computer-generated.
There's no photography involved whatsoever.
Right. Okay.
So it's all generated on a program on the computer.
Right.
Which I've now been doing for 15 years.
And right. So. Okay. And that's your main output is digital computer.
Computer animation, really.
Okay.
It's the same stuff they use for all the big things in Hollywood.
Oh, really?
But I try and use it in a subversive way.
Right.
You know, I'm not interested in making things with blue fur or, you know, and that's...
Right.
That's what they use. You know, all those big movies, animation movies, use the program I use.
Right. So that would be CGI.
Yes. Well, that's the generic term for this.
Right. But is that that includes what you do or not?
Well, it does, but... Yes, but I mean, being an artist, it doesn't seem very relevant to me, these commercial terms.
Right, okay.
Computer graphic, you know,
computer generated imagery, I suppose, is what
it is the generic term for it, isn't
it? Right, right. So, okay, so it's called Unnatural Order, and I have a quote here from you, actually, from your website. Which I suppose we should give that a quick.
Fine.
Where is what is that? www.andrewgreaves
at .org.uk.
.org.uk. Fine. And this quote from you: the visual theme of Unnatural Order is based on an imagining of the sea in Solaris. The book or the film?
The book originally.
Right. Okay.
I was impressed with the book, which I did. I read in the '60s.
Right.
Really? And I've never read since.
Yeah.
I remember being on the bus reading it, and it sort of grabbed me. And it's one of those images that I've carried around with me, really. And when I started making it, that became evident. That was a hook for the imagery, really.
What, your memory of the book? You see,
yes.
Your memory of this...
An image created by the book.
Right, OK. Yeah. So how did you create the imagery to coincide with your... memory.
It came, no. It? No, what happened was when I started making it, you just have something to start with.
Yeah.
Like a painting. You can, some people draw them out, don't they? I mean, have a cartoon of a painting and then fill it in.
Right.
I don't work that way. I have a vague idea and I build, keep working on it till something concrete comes out of it.
Right.
Virtually concrete, I should say.
But yeah.
comes out of it.
Okay. And then it goes on. This example of xenobiology. I have no idea what that means, came vividly to mind whilst I was creating the animation for the movie. As the camera hovers voyeuristically and pans across the surface, sounds and sentences sporadically emerge. This gradual evolution is deceptive. Quite often very little seems to be happening, but if you look away for a moment, then return to the movie, much will have changed. And there's a quote from Brian. Humans modify their surroundings to suit themselves and modify themselves to suit their surroundings. This has been going on for almost 5 million years. We're close to finishing the project, making the world a product of our imagination. The benefits are obvious, but there are considerable disbenefits. So,
I hope you're not going to ask me to comment on that.
Well, all right.
Which you are.
Someone else described it as sort of one of your films that he saw at the horse hospital, and I think he described it as melting geometry.
Except that does imply some sort of filter that makes it run down the, you know, it's almost conjures up an image of stuff running down.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
But fluid geometry might be better.
That might be what he said.
Yeah, okay.
Fluid geometry, yeah. No,
well...
Yeah.
It's actually two surfaces interacting.
Right.
And see, I think in the book, it's an intelligent sea. You know, it has an intelligence.
Right.
Which I don't think are the Earth seas are intelligent. They may be.
Yeah.
But no, they're vehicles of the moon, aren't they? But this is not. It does interact with the people that it comes in, or the creatures it comes in contact with.
Okay.
That's the difference between...
Sea
in Solaris and ours. It's a vehicle.
Right.
Whereas our sea is a vehicle.
So is this a good time to cast ourselves back to this bus that you were on in the 60s?
Oh.
Perhaps. Where would this bus have been?
Do you know, I have no idea. I was in probably a London bus.
Yeah.
But I suspect I was actually, I did move to Cumbria for a year Uh-huh. It wasn't called Cumbria then, but whatever it was called then.
Cumberland or something?
Probably.
Northumberland.
And I did use the bus a bit there, and I had a long time. I mean, maybe I was going to Newcastle or something, and so I could read on the bus. And I think it might have been there, actually, but I've never thought of it like that before. So you're digging the memory banks here.
But you live in Cumbria now, don't you?
I do, indeed.
But you would have started the film before you moved to Cumbria.
I completed it before I moved to Cumbria.
So that memory of that might have been on a bus in Cumbria is fairly irrelevant to this particular film, but
well, it's only insofar as it was the trigger for
right.
Once I got that embedded into the imagery, then it made it very clear to me. It made my direction quite quite clear.
So let's go back a bit further. You started out in Derby, I think.
Yes,
is that right?
I was born in Derby.
You were born in Derby. And you were at art school, I think, with Ian Brakewell and Kevin Coyne?
Well, this is always a mystery to me because I'm the same age as them. Mm-hmm. I went into the second year and they started a year below me, and I had no idea why. I think they were trying to save on grants at the time.
Right.
That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah.
Because I should have been in their year because we're identical ages.
Okay. So then you moved to London, or
I moved to London as soon as I finished the course. Yes, 64.
And you'd all. I mean, obviously I've known you for a number of years, and
30.
A long time. And I've always known you've always been a committed artist. I sort of remember that you've always you knew very early on that you wanted to be an artist, and there was no. Absolutely no kind of diversion from that. There's never going to be anything else for you. That's, for me, I find that difficult, you see. I can't quite sort of... It's extraordinary to be so single-minded about something for me and to pursue it for that length of time.
It's particularly difficult if you have a personality like mine, which is which is totally retiring and reclusive. I mean, I shouldn't be that as an artist. You know, one should be wanting to spread the goods around. And, and I'm not particularly good at explaining myself or, well, I can do. Given the right situation, which I hope is going to be now. No, I have been very shy and reclusive on the whole. But at the same time, something's driven me around, driven me on.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's what makes me tick.
Right.
Okay. But a lot of bad artists say that as well, so it's nothing to do with quality or anything like that.
Right. So do the films... you've been making these digital movies, animations, for 15 years.
I've been doing digital work for 15 years. The animation came a bit later. I think I was about 10 years, I think.
Okay.
Because the 3D animation didn't exist when I started.
Oh, right.
In a commercial, you know, in a sort of...
I was going to say, there must be a constant chase to keep up with the technology. Don't you have to sort of upgrade your equipment sort of every so frequently?
Well, it's very equipment intensive, if there is such a phrase.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I haven't got to a stage now where I don't even notice the equipment. And it's so good. The program I use is so big that I only use... 1/100 of it.
Really? Okay.
And it's 10 programs in one. So
is this pre-existing software?
The software itself is pre-existing.
Right.
I mean, I can mention the name if you want, but I don't, you know, is it important?
I don't. It's not important to me. No. I don't.
It isn't important to me, actually. No. Except it is the most sophisticated of them.
Is it? Mm. Okay. And costly?
To buy?
Yeah.
Well, it's come down a lot, but it was about 1500 when it first came out.
Right.
Which, for
an
individual, is quite a lot of money, really.
And do you ever kind of, as a computer artist, do you ever... It seems to me that there comes a point where you almost have to try and engage with the software yourself to alter the software or design the software yourself in order to be...
Well, it's got a program. It's got its own code. It can be reprogrammed, but not... It's only the code. If you use the code, it's to make things more automated rather than... Which is not something I do. I like to be... The tools are like any other tools in the studio.
Yeah.
You know, they're just like having one's bricks or mortar or cement around with them, you know, or paint.
Now, I remember quite some time ago when I bought a Sony Walkman professional tape recorder. Do you remember this?
I do indeed.
I don't remember exactly when it was, but
it was for a show I did at the Museum of Installation in 91.
Oh, right. But I'd had the thing long before that.
Sure.
I bought it in the 80s, and I remember we did some recordings with it, didn't we?
Yes.
And I remember you were, as usual, almost everything you do, you do bring something oblique. That's the only word I can think of.
Fine with me.
It's as though you approach things sort of sideways. So I remember having this recorder, and I would think about the recordings I would make. And the recordings you made with it were always completely sort of ambiguous and couldn't be defined. You'd think, what the hell was that? How did you make that, even though it was a straight recording?
Right. Well, that's very good, because that was my intention, but I don't know whether one never knows whether
it
works.
Well, you did something with polystyrene, didn't you?
Yes, I suppose I did.
You'd never know what the hell it was if you heard the recording.
No. Well, it was for the show included four rooms, really, but two rooms where one sat with headphones on under a neon lamp.
Yeah.
And these things were played.
Right.
Very crude. I mean, the technology was you pressed a button, a remote button, and a tape recorder came on. But
yeah. And I thought we'd sort of... You've brought with you a CD, which also sort of trades on ambiguity, I suppose.
I think all my work trades on ambiguity.
I think it does, doesn't it?
And yes. I can't do anything straight. If I think it's illustrative in an obvious way, I reject it.
Right.
And it's not easy. I mean, it doesn't...
Well, I was going to say, I mean, is this sort of a natural thing? Have you always had this facility for kind of looking... I remember your photographs were the same. If you took a photograph, it would be from a sort of position or from an attitude that would not have occurred to other people.
Well, that's very nice of you to say so. But and I think it isn't. It's just something I do intuitively.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And yes.
Yeah.
And I did like those quizzes. You used to get cards.
Oh, yeah.
Do you ever books of with weird photographs? But they were obvious. They were very ordinary objects, but photographed from a strange angle. They were puzzled photographs.
When you had to figure out what they were.
Yeah, that's always.
Yeah. When did you, where would you have seen those?
Oh, in the '50s, perhaps.
Okay. Right. So is this where you've got? Is this where the inspiration?
Possibly. I found a box recently, 20 years ago, and realised that probably was something to do with it.
Right. Right.
It's like I used to play the piano when I was in my teens, and the best time was when it got broken up, and I used to go in the garden, pluck the strings, never hearing of John Cage or anything like that. So
right, right.
I used to improvise on the strings there, so I've always been an improviser in that way as well.
Right, okay. And you've always had a lifelong passion for music, haven't you?
Second
to art.
Yeah, but it's pretty close at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I thought let's play a track from this. You brought a CD in with you with two tracks on it. Well, let's just
play one. You have to tell me which tracks they are. Because
I don't know because I've never heard it before. But let's just play this and see what happens.
Thank you.
Well, we could talk over the top of this, I suppose, if that's all right with you, unless that's sacrilege.
Not at all. No, that's...
Actually, in fact, it seems to have ended.
Yes, it's only about 1.5 minutes too long.
Oh, right.
It's only part of it. That's from a movie called Flip.
Okay.
Which is actually, it's a big shape moving over, sort of turning in on itself.
And
just an abstract. All my movies are abstract, really. I mean, I was an abstract artist. I've always been an abstract artist. As opposed to... Well, no, sorry. There was a time when I first met you when I wasn't.
I was just going to say, I was sort of... I don't want to be nitpicking, but
no.
I do remember a phase of painting, in fact.
Yes.
Yes?
All well, right. I did painting at art college because I didn't know any better, really. Well, there wasn't. Okay. There wasn't sculpture in the way I would then.
Well, this brings me nicely onto my theme of auto-destructive art and destruction in art.
Yes.
And I think you were going to tell me you did have a story about your own dealings with destroying your own art, didn't you?
I do, yes. Well, I spent this year in Cumbria and I had a big studio there and I made
quite
a lot of
work. When was this, roughly?
Well, I think it's about 69. I'm beginning to forget.
Right.
But and there was no record of it. I think it was about 69 to 70 or something like that.
Yeah.
And I moved back to a smaller studio in London. I hadn't anywhere to put the staff.
Yeah.
And I knew Dave Curtis, who opened the second Arts Lab. Well, the first one was in Drury Lane. The second one was just over...
Near Drummond Street.
The continuation of Drummond Street. It was, was the old fire station, in
right.
fact. And so I gave, and there was I used to show with a guy called Roderick Stokes, and we both gave our work because we shared a studio and we hadn't got room for it. So we both gave our work to the opening of this.
Yeah.
And I went to the opening and never went back. And so I've no idea what happened to it. Got one photograph of the opening, and that's it. So someone might know. Yeah. I did meet someone a couple of years ago and said they were at the opening and they remember it. But goodness me,
yeah,
I know.
So you willingly sacrificed the work,
the previous work up to that date, three dimensional work anyway.
Oh right.
No, it was nearly 10 years' work.
Yes.
No, it was 6 years' work.
Okay.
Mad. I mean, because. I don't know. I'd had enough of... I went through an anti-art phase, I think.
Ah. Oh, yes. Right,
and
right.
When you first met me, I was sort of getting back into being an artist again, because I had spent time doing other things, which...
Well, that's interesting. Oh, I never knew this before, you see. I didn't realise you... So you did have a phase of what, being disillusioned with art, or...? So,
well, yes. I mean, it was very hard surviving... Yeah, I had to work nights to do my work, you know, and I was tired, and I wanted to see if I could use my skills to in a commercial way, which didn't really happen, to be quite honest. But,
right. Okay.
But you know what did happen, but let's keep it between us.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you were working at, was that on the telephone exchange?
Well, that's previous to leaving to Cumbria.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nights at the telephone, which was a very good job. I mean, you know.
Okay. Well, that's let's just mention your film again, which is showing on Sunday afternoon. The programme starts at 4:30, and Unnatural Order is the last film in this programme. On Sunday.
And no one has seen it. It's not been shown publicly.
Right?
No, people think it's the one that I showed at the horse hospital. It isn't.
Right.
Don't know why, because Brian and I collaborated with two films.
I see. Okay, so this will be a premiere of this film.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's good. I didn't even know that, actually.
Yeah.
All right. Well, actually, that track we just played, you better... Can you just remind me that there's some hidden, disguised sort of... are we not... Do you not want... Do you want to leave that veiled?
I think it's infringing copyright laws.
Oh, is it?
That.
So it samples something which should remain veiled.
Absolutely. And there'll be a big prize if anyone can work it out.
Okay. You will donate the prize. And the same applies to this next track then. So we're going to play another track, which is similarly, what is it, extended, protracted, stretched or something?
Well, there's all sorts of techniques involved in that.
Right.
It's multi-layered anyway, put it that way.
Okay, but both of them, the previous one and the one I'm going to play, they include music by somebody who will have to remain anonymous.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Fair enough.
All right. Well, jail is not something I look forward to.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much to Andrew Greaves for coming into the studio, and we are now going to have to shoot over to the Whitechapel in order to catch the first program of films. So we'll just play out with this next track of yours, Andrew.